Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk joining you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us at supertalk.fm or wherever it is you get podcasts from. We appreciate all of our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Hot, cold, whatever the weather wants to be, rainy, sunny, humid, whatever it is, there's a drink for all seasons at Strange Brew Coffee House. Head over to the drive-thru there on Highway 12, the walk-up window over on University Drive, or just step inside, sit down, enjoy some music that Robbie and I would probably be like, what is this? We don't know what this is, but you might like it.
They play hipster music in there?
Hipster is a strong word. It's a strong word.
Okay. What kind of music are we talking?
I don't know.
The music when you walk into Abercrombie and Fitch.
Okay. I've never walked into an Abercrombie and Fitch because why?
Do those still exist?
They still exist, but like, why would I go in there? Do you think there's anything over XL on the shelves there?
I walked into a mall the other day in Nashville, the Opry Mall. There is still a Hollister. But there's no cologne that knocks you down when you walk into the front door.
I don't know.
I missed the cologne just slapping me in the face.
I had a long debate with some friends of mine. They thought it was creepy that I went to buy my kid something from Hot Topic.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I went to Hot Topic
and bought like three shirts the other day.
They don't have my size, but they had shirts I would wear there. But
yeah,
I made the comments like, I look like a fish out of water, right? I'm in Hot Topic with all this like goth stuff and they're playing death metal, and I'm wearing a khaki shorts and a blue polo, and I'm just looking around like, yeah, what Demon Slayer stuff? Do you have that? Do you have that? My daughter's a big anime fan, and so they're trying to give me grief. Like, I'm like, sorry for getting my kids gifts. Sorry.
Demon Slayer is an anime?
It's an anime. I don't know. I don't watch anime. I don't know anything about it, but my kids do. What that has to do with coffee, I don't know.
Sorry to mess up your the front end of the show for you.
I promise you. It's not the first time. College Corner, I've got a giveaway we're going to do next week for you dads. We got three MSU Bulldog Dad t-shirts we're going to give away next week. So we're going to have three winners on our College Corner giveaway. And if you're not the lucky winner, well, then you can always go to College Corner. Two locations to serve you in Jackson, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Get your Father's Day gifts taken care of with College Corner. Humble Taco is going to be hopping this weekend. We're supposed to have some good weather, it looks like, for the regional, and that means the patio will be buzzing. Head out there to enjoy Mexican fare with Mississippi roots, your Southern classics turned into Mexican classics, a unique menu unlike any you've ever seen at a Mexican restaurant or just about anywhere else. You know when Ty Tim's is involved, the food is going to be good, and it's going to be an experience you'll remember. So head over to Humble Taco, Starkville's newest and best Mexican restaurant. It is, gosh, like 48 to 72 hours away, depending on when you listen, from Super Regional Baseball. So Robbie and I thought that would be the perfect time to have a show entirely dedicated to football.
It's always time to talk football in Mississippi.
Yeah. So. Oh, I don't disagree with that. You will never not get me to want to talk about college football.
Although someone was angry at me the other day because I started doing my stories when I do my 100-day countdown
for football season. That.
Guy was mad because I wasn't showing respect to baseball season. And I wrote like two baseball stories that day.
Speaking of things like that, did we ever get clarification on why Lamonis was a creep?
No. The guy just said he shouldn't be drinking at this point in the day.
I agree with that.
I don't know where that came from. The only thing that I can decipher from that could possibly be what the guy was talking about is that he thought Andy Canizero was after Gary Henderson, which was the...
Another huge Bulldog fan.
The only reason that Gary Henderson was the interim coach is because of Andy Canizero.
Yes, I know that. You knew that.
Every day is a new adventure on Twitter, whether it be with a State fan or an Ole Miss fan or a Vandy fan or a South Carolina women's basketball fan.
It takes all kinds. So here's what we've got for today. For tomorrow's show, we will do a full preview of Mississippi State Notre Dame, including an interview with Blue and Gold Illustrated's Patrick Engel, who gives a really good preview of what the Fighting Irish are going to bring. But we're going to do football today, and we're going to start with opponent previews. And if you're a longtime listener to any podcast I've been on, you know that my plan for this is we always start at the end, and we work our way to week one, so that on week one, we're talking about the week one opponent. And that means we get to start with the Egg Bowl. Egg Bowl in June, regardless of what my guest is going to say, it's never too early to talk about the Egg Bowl. Let's just talk about what happened last year in Oxford. you know, Mississippi State went up there, obviously not at full strength, not anywhere close to it. And I don't know about you. You were covering the game with me there. Ole Miss was up 14-0, and I think the state people in the press box were looking around going, going to be a long day for the Bulldogs. And in reality, that turnover that happens in the first quarter, where Austin Williams reaches the ball out and it gets stripped by Tylan Knight, is the difference in the game. State played score for score with Ole Miss after that, had the ball with a chance to tie the game on the final drive, and just ran out of time. You know, I'm not saying they would have scored or not, but the clock ran out on them. Will as good a day as Matt Corral had in that game, Will Rogers set a new single Egg Bowl game passing record, 440 yards in that game, that he really looked sharp. And I left that game thinking, and I'm not a big fan of the what-ifs, and I'm not a big fan of this, that, and the other, but I left that game thinking, if State had been at full strength defensively, and I'm not even talking about the people who were opted out for good. I'm not talking about Pickering and Marcus. I'm just saying if Jordan Davis could have played, if there was another linebacker out, I forget who it was, but if they had been at full strength, it may have been, I don't think it was Tyrus Wheat, but it may have been. I can't remember. So many guys in and out of that lineup. Either. You know, I mean, you had Landon Guidry out there trying to cover Elijah Moore, and I give Landon Guidry a ton of credit. After the game, he's like, hey, I messed up, and that's a big man to say that. But I got the feeling that if State had been at full strength, or what they were against Georgia, or what they were against Auburn the week after that, they had a chance to win that football game. And that speaks to something, because I thought Ole Miss was a much better team than Mississippi State last year.
I don't even think they even had to be at full strength. I think that they could have won that ball game if Austin Williams scores a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that's not to blame the ball game on him. I don't.
He doesn't even have to score on that play.
Right.
Just don't fumble. And State's still going to get in.
Because that was a 14-point swing right there. You go from you're about to score a touchdown, it's about to be 7-7, to fumbling the ball on the goal line on what was going to be a touchdown, and Ole Miss running it back inside the five or whatever they did and scoring a touchdown after that. And, you know, it was good on State to kind of regroup there, and defensively they started to get some stops here and there. Offensively they were moving the ball well, they started scoring. But that was you can't get 14 points behind Ole Miss with the way that their offense was rolling there with Elijah Moore, Matt Corral, and those guys. So the State dug themselves in a hole that they couldn't get out of. But I think those teams were I don't know if even's the right word, because Mississippi State from a talent perspective and kind of where the roster was at the time was a little behind Ole Miss. But just from energy and being in that ball game, I feel like those two teams were pretty close as the game progressed from there. And, you know, State actually outscored them after going down 14-0. So that play really was the deciding factor in my mind of how that game would turn out. But you're right. I mean, there were a lot of guys defensively that were out of that ball game, and State was really just outmatched at the skill position spots. Yeah. But we also saw some guys really continue to emerge, like Jaden Wally and Will Rogers, that had huge ball games.
I left that game thinking Jaquarius Spivey was going to be a part of things going forward. Obviously, he's gone now to Arizona State.
And Javonte Payton went out, and he's gone now too, but he went out on the first possession.
Yeah.
He got hurt.
Yeah.
So that was a big loss. That was one of your top receivers.
He had a ton of walk-ons playing. Sherman Timms played a lot. Jay Jemison played a lot in that game. There was another safety in there that played. I mean, it just wasn't meant to be that day for Mississippi State, no question. I always judge games that are toss-ups. I have a system. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. I will now detail it. If you've never listened before, if you have a game where there's a toss-up, I'll always look at three things. Better coach, better quarterback, where are we playing? So when you look at this year's Egg Bowl, where you're playing, obviously, is Starkville, so advantage Mississippi State. Better quarterback, there's really no question. It is Matt Corral. Matt Corral is the better quarterback. Then, better coach. Is there anything one way or the other for these two guys, or is this just sort of a dead heat for you?
Going into this season?
Yeah.
You know,
or just overall, Kiffin versus Leach.
I like Kiffin better from a play calling standpoint, and as a guy that kind of likes a little more balance, I like that offense a little better. I think it's more dangerous in this league. But you cannot discount, what Mike Leach has done over the years. And it just seems like he always has that ball game that he's not supposed to win that he wins.
Right. I don't necessarily know that that's this game.
Right. This game's a toss-up, you know, just about every year. But Ole Miss is coming in with the better quarterback. Ole Miss is coming in with probably more offensive pieces than Mississippi State has. I think the difference in this kind of game is going to be not necessarily the play callers or anything like that. I think it's going to be who's playing the best defense at the time. Is there a defense that can limit the other team? If Ole Miss comes out and their defense is the same or around the same as it was last year, then I think that, you know, State's going to be – I think State can be favored in this ball game. Because I really believe that Zach Arnett's going to be able to dial something up, and he's going to have some pieces out there that he can slow down. So it kind of – in some ways, it's going to neutralize a little bit of what Lane Kiffin does as a play caller and a little bit of what Matt Corral does as well, although they're going to get their yards and points a lot of times too. But it kind of neutralizes a little bit of the head coaching part of things and also the quarterback. I think the defenses, to me, is what's going to be the difference in a win or a loss.
It's interesting in that both teams were really bad on one side of the ball last year. State was really bad offensively. Ole Miss was really bad defensively. But with Mike Leach, you expect State to be better offensively in year two. I mean, I feel pretty confident in that expectation. Ole Miss has been bad defensively since 2015.
Yes.
I don't believe they're going to be that much improved. Now, they've added some talent, and I like a couple of the pieces they have. I think that, you know, Otis Reese is a really good football player. Momo Sanogo is a good linebacker. I thought Jacquez Jones was a good linebacker, but he's headed on to greener pastures. That gets addressed quite humorously in the interview I have with Ben Garrett. And you know, Sam Williams is a good player. I like Jamon Gordon as a piece on the defensive line that they added. I think he provides some good depth, and he can be a starter if you need him. But there's still not one single player on that team that I would feel comfortable saying is going to be finished as first or second team All-SEC.
And they're not adding the talent where you say, okay, they're going to go from last in the SEC to top five.
Right.
It's not like
they had an
influx.
But they don't have to either. They just need to be top eight.
And that's funny. You know, we said that about Mississippi State last year coming in. I mean, defense was like the big concern because you said Mike Leach is going to score points.
Right.
He's going to put up yards. That's a given. And it turned out to be the opposite. Mississippi State's defense was top half of the league.
They won games with defense sometimes.
And you're like, God, if the offense could have just been what we think Mike Leach's offense could be, I mean, you're talking about five or six SEC wins. But, you know, it didn't turn out that way. But I really feel like this offense is going to be much better than it was a year ago. You feel like it has to be because you have the spring, the summer, and then fall camp to get ready. And you've had a full year where you're kind of implementing this system. So, you know, for Mississippi State, you feel like the offense is going to be better. For Ole Miss, you feel like the defense is going to be better. So where does that leave things going into this ball game? You know, is Ole Miss getting more of an edge here or is Mississippi State? That's kind of the question.
One thing I will say, tell you from the interview that is 100% accurate, is for Ole Miss, their season 100% hinges on Matt Corral.
Yes.
If he misses any time, they are in a world of hurt. Because if they go to Plumlee, they can't run the offense the way Lane Kiffin wants to. And I don't know that Kincaid Dent or Luke Altmyer are ready to step into that role at this time. You covered Altmyer a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
what happens
if Corral goes down and they say, we're going to let Luke take over?
From an arm talent standpoint, you know, he can make every throw.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he's ready physically to jump into the mix in the SEC. I think, and from what I've been able to tell, just seeing pictures of Luke and stuff, it seems like he's putting on some good weight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's starting to prepare his body a little bit. He's got to get bigger. And, you know, from a, you know, just knowing the offense standpoint, I think he'll be fine. But Matt Corral is such a dynamic guy.
Yeah.
You know, he can chunk the ball 50, 60 yards down the field. You know, he can make every throw.
Does Altmyer have the mobility that Corral has?
No.
Okay.
I mean, he's straight line speed. He's deceptively fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how fast he runs in a 40, but he can get away from people.
But does he have that?
I don't know. He doesn't have that elusiveness that Corral has. Moving side to side, he's not as
Corral's
quick.
Pocket awareness is pretty high.
Yeah,
pretty high.
You don't often see him get sacked.
Yeah, you could somehow stitch John Rhys Plumlee's legs on a Luke Altmyer. You got something there. But
yeah, if you could mix John Rhys Plumlee with Luke Altmyer, you'd have a pretty darn good quarterback.
All right, let's get into this interview now. I talked to Spirit Ben, Ben Garrett of the Ole Miss Spirit, my good friend, and Robbie's too, whether he wants to admit it or not.
We both work for the same network. So.
That's true. That's true. We talked for a good half hour about this game and about the Egg Bowl and about Ole Miss. We'll get a good preview of the Rebels here on the Welcome Home Beef Hotline. Here's Ben Garrett of the Ole Miss Spirit. Well, even though both teams are still playing postseason baseball, and even though it is the beginning of June, we are 12 weeks away from the start of the college football season. That means it's opponent preview time here on Thunder and Lightning, and that means on the Welcome Home Beef Hotline is my friend from the Ole Miss Spirit, Ben Garrett, on to talk some Egg Bowl in June. Is it ever too early, rivalry aside, is it ever too early to talk about this game?
Yes, this is too early. When you're doing the whole intro there, I was thinking, right, there's baseball for both programs coming up. They're both in Supers, Omaha, whatever. And there's so much more time between now and when these teams play in November. So is there an early time? Is this too early of a time? It's now. This is too early.
Well, we're going to do it anyway.
So okay, fine.
You'll just have to be a part of that. Ole Miss, offensively, we all know what they are. They're going to be really good. Matt Corral, probably, if he's not my all-SEC quarterback, he's certainly my second-team guy when we get to media days.
First?
JT Daniels could be it.
Okay.
He's got more talent around him. Those are the only two real options in the SEC this year. You know, I mean, there's nobody else just stands out. Certainly not Bo Nix. He's
never Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a weird stat the other day. It said basically Ole Miss returns 100% of its passing yards, but less than 50% of its receiving yards because Elijah Moore and Kenny Yeboah, and Moore specifically, such a big chunk of that. So I'm just going to ask you the question that everybody's going to ask, and that's who replaces Elijah Moore?
I don't think there's any one person that replaces Elijah Moore. I think that's impossible. And if you've been watching, I don't know if anybody cares about Twitter. I don't. We talked about this before we started recording.
We did.
Any reports from New York Jets camp on Twitter or anywhere online, you've seen that Elijah's had an absolutely ridiculous camp, and he's been the one of all the Jets, which I don't know if it really says all that much because it's the Jets, but of all the Jets, he's by far and away the biggest storyline of camp, and he's been the most impressive, and that's because he is, and it's been kind of quiet because of the sophomore year that was lost to an offense that was archaic. He is one of the greatest receivers to ever come through Ole Miss. And he's, without a doubt, the best slot receiver. So I don't think there's ever going to be one guy this year that replaces Elijah Moore. But there is a group there that all together could replicate in some way his production, even though they're never going to fully replicate what he did. Because what he did was make everybody better. Because he was by himself a double coverage nightmare because you couldn't really double cover him because that's just, he's too good of a route runner. I've said this before, and you know this. Like, I've always said that A.J. Brown's the best wide receiver ever come through here. And then Laquon Treadwell's in there. But as far as route running, it's Elijah Moore. So he was pretty much a double coverage buster, and there's no guy like that on this roster. So you could see Jonathan Mingo in the slot. You could see J.J. Henry, a newcomer, in the slot. Ja'Cory Pearson, the transfer from Western Kentucky, he could be in the slot. There are a lot of guys that could play there. And I even saw Dontario Drummond in the spot a little bit this spring. So there are guys that could play that position, but it's never going to be just one guy. And I think what's going to happen more with this offense this year is it's going to have to be spread out more, which will rely on guys like Braylon Sanders, who doesn't have a track record of being durable, being healthy. He has to stay on the field because otherwise you could see the passing game be a little bit more sporadic. I think that is a concern. And I think one thing that you brought up that's really important here is Kenny Yeboah. Yeah, he fell off as far as production toward the end of the year, and then he missed the last two games because he opted out. But when he was good, their offense was paired with Elijah Moore at its very best. So having somebody step in at tight end, and we all thought there would be a transfer in there at this point. There hasn't been. So will Casey Kelly be that guy? Will he step in and be able to maybe be a plug-and-play tight end? Because there is an argument that whoever Lane Kiffin plugs and plays a tight end, they are successful in this offense. Or will it be Hudson Wolf? Is he healthy enough? There's a lot of question marks about the replacements for those two particular positions. But unlike a tight end, wide receiver, they do have numbers, but there's just no obvious guy.
Let me play devil's advocate with this question for you, though.
Okay.
Because prior to 2020, Elijah Moore, he's a good receiver. That's what you would have said about him. He's a good receiver.
nobody could have projected him breaking A.J. Brown's records and becoming what he was. So isn't there a, should there be a confidence level that, look, Kiffin was able to do this with Elijah Moore, he can do it again with somebody else?
There's certainly an argument that can be made there, because Lane Kiffin, when he looked at the Ole Miss job, one of the big draws for him, he said, was Elijah Moore. And one of the first calls he made, one of the only early calls he made, was to Elijah Moore and said, you're going to break records. And I think because a lot of people, and this is where I disagree, a lot of people, when they actually viewed Elijah Moore on a day-to-day basis, not from a national perspective, but if you were around Ole Miss like we were, and you saw Elijah Moore every single day, you said, oh my God, he is being wasted. Because he was. His freshman year was really, really good, but he was overshadowed because why? There was A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf on the roster, mm-hmm. and of course those guys are going to demand all the attention. DeMarcus Lodge, yeah, one of the most underrated or maybe undervalued wide receivers ever come through here too. And then sophomore year, like I said, you know, to start, it was an archaic offense that was stuck in 2008, 2007, whatever. Sure. And the passing game was just completely abandoned in many ways. I mean, the only routes Elijah Moore got to run was within 5 to 15 yards. He never really got the opportunity to stretch the field, and they had a quarterback, John Rice Plumlee, that even if they tried to, he couldn't get him the ball. So that's why I think I would disagree in that way, because anybody that was there on a day-to-day basis knew that he was a wide receiver of equal, if not better talent in certain respects than all the other greats to come through here, specifically in route running. He was just getting wasted. So it's not going to be easy for one person, considering how good he was as a route runner, to just step in and do what he did. But I do agree, though, that in this offense, there is a lot of the plug-and-play component to it, specifically at tight end, and there is an argument to be made at slot receiver. But still, even knowing that, what he did last year was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And I think he was averaging, oh, my God. I mean, how many 200-yard games? He was breaking records. He broke A.J. Brown's records. And then, not to mention, I think he was number two in Pro Football Focus, no less than number two in pretty much every major
He broke A.J. Brown's record in a 10-game season that was all SEC opponents.
And he opted out.
He missed the last game, right?
LSU, and then misses the
He missed two games. Yeah, so he played nine. Yeah. So in nine games, he basically had 180 yards per game, if I'm correct.
Yeah, and that just shows you that, I mean, the number, it was video game numbers. Yeah. And that's why no one person will. But there are plenty of guys that all put together could do it because they have numbers of wide receiver. The real concern for me, because you made a good point about how the offense is going to be really good, they're going to put up numbers, they're going to put up yards. Yeah, but it could be a little bit more, you know, stunted in a way because of there are question marks at key positions, tight end being one of them. And then Royce Newman, how good he was and undervalued he was as a fourth-round pick to the Packers as a right tackle. And there's some questions in the offensive line of who's tackle, who's playing center, because I think Ben Brown's going to be moved back out to guard just because that's where the need is. Nick Broker, they would prefer him not be left tackle because they think he's a pro football right tackle, maybe even guard. But he's playing left tackle because that's where the need is. So there are some question marks on that offense. But the offense I don't think is really overly the concern here. It's always going to come back to the defense because you do believe that in a Lane Kiffin team, the offense is always going to score points and put up yards.
We'll get to the defense in just a minute. We'll talk a little bit about Corral. Threw 14 picks a year ago, but he threw 11 of them in two games.
That's right.
Can he erase that from his what he has to offer? Can he stop being that guy that, you know, yeah, there's always this fear that he's going to have a 4 or 5 interception game?
I think that's just kind of who he is, isn't it? I mean, as long as it's not 6.
Yeah.
I mean, the six interception game, that's
5 is okay, but 6 is too many.
Yeah, I mean, even 5, you're like, God, man, you know, just 2 less. I think there's always going to be a game where he just has 3 or 4, but you just can't have the absolute blow-up game. And we all kind of forget this, but like last year was his first full year starting.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were going to be games that weren't necessarily clunkers, but at least he was going to have ugly games. And those were his ugly games. And even in his ugly games, he still put Ole Miss in a position to win. Even if he put Ole Miss in a position to lose to begin with, he was coming back to put Ole Miss in position to win by being able to stretch the field unlike any other quarterback on the roster. And not since Chad Kelly has Ole Miss had a deep ball throw like this. I don't think outside of Eli and Chad and Matt, there's ever been a deep ball thrower as good as Matt Corral. So I think he can eliminate it just because it's his I mean, every single year he's been in college, he's had a new offensive coordinator. Yeah. So to be able to have the same offensive coordinator for two straight years, going into his draft eligible year in a quarterback class for the NFL draft next year that isn't particularly strong, I think not only could he absolutely be motivated to eliminate those things just purely based on what he's trying to do personally, but for a team perspective, I think he's going to benefit from the consistency of having the same head coach, the same quarterback coach, the same offensive coordinator, the same everything except for the offensive line coach, but that has no impact on him. But having everything around him be consistently the same, and that should, you would think, in theory, eliminate some of those turnovers, or just those two blow-up games, because you're right, he was remarkably consistent in all but two games. But can you limit those things? I think that's pretty easy to do if your blow-ups are only like three interceptions.
Yeah.
And I think it's easier to ask, hey, okay, yeah, you're going to throw three interceptions. Don't not be you. A big part of what makes you who you are is your willingness to make take risk and push the ball down the field. Do those things, but just don't throw into double, triple coverage just because you get a little hurried up. It's okay to survive for second down. Okay, I take a sack for 2-3 yard loss. At least I'm surviving for another down, and it's okay to punt. I think Matt Corral, sometimes in those games where he blew up, he got a little carried away because he just doesn't ever want to punt. Sometimes it's okay to punt.
Yeah.
It's okay. It happens. Football teams punt. You don't always find success on every good drive.
I'll definitely tell you that it happens. I've seen that.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw recently the Athletic did a state of the program on Ole Miss, and they had an SEC coach, anonymous off the record or whatever, and he said, he was talking about Corral, and he said, yeah, he's good. He can run a little bit. Not the best deep ball. And
where does this come from? What are these?
We figured it out.
What do they want?
Michael Borky and I figured it out. He's talking about Plumlee.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So that leads to my next question and my last question about the offense. What is John Rhys Plumlee's role this year?
There's two answers to that. One, I'm not positive that he'll be here. I still don't think that decision has been made.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's still with baseball, it's becoming late, but as we've seen, kids are still entering the transfer portal right now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that it's June. I think kids will be entering the portal in July. I don't think rosters will be settled until August. So as much as he's playing for Ole Miss baseball, and it's not a starter role or anything like that, but he's playing significant time for Ole Miss baseball. I still don't think the football decision has been made, so that will have to be settled. There'll have to be a true resolution to that before we can really know for sure. But assuming that he's on the roster, I think, first of all, if, God forbid, anything were to happen to Matt Corral, John Rhys Plumlee, in a pinch, is going in at quarterback. Because at least you know exactly what he's going to do. And he's at least performed at the highest level. Now, he can't pass, but he performed at the highest level. And they would have at least a truncated offense or system, whatever, for John Rhys Plumlee in a pinch. And then in the long-term view, they would prepare one of Kincaid Dent or Luke Altmyer to replace Matt Corral. But outside of being the emergency number two quarterback, I think what you saw him do in the Outback Bowl is a good example of what he would do or what kind of role he would play in a full year if he embraced it. But he hasn't ever truly embraced it. I mean, really, he just wanted to get on the field of the Outback Bowl because that's not just a role that they said, hey, presented to them, you can do this that week. I mean, this is something they talked to him about, but he was completely dismissive of it. And I think the full belief throughout the year was that John Rhys, at the end of the year, or after baseball, whatever, was going to transfer out because he was committed to being a quarterback. And that still could happen. But if he does stay, it won't just be as a slot receiver. And I think that's what Ole Miss fans and a lot of people, oh, just put him as a slot receiver. Well, there's got to be a willingness on the part of the kid. And also, I think Ole Miss views him, and I'm not saying he's this player in any way, but they view him kind of like Percy Harvin in terms of playing him everywhere. You remember how Percy lined up in the backfield and then split out wide slot? Wherever you wanted to put him, he was just a Swiss Army knife weapon that they could use. Same thing with John Rhys Plumlee. And I think they would line him up in the backfield. They did that with him a little bit, and even the lead-up to the Outback Bowl. But then the Outback Bowl, he really showed what he could be just as a true offensive weapon. And, yes, the route running isn't particularly clean, but, I mean, on that last drive, it was John Rhys who made the two biggest plays that set them up to win. So, yeah, I think that's what you would see from him. He'd be a lot of slot receiver, maybe even lining up as a running back at times, a gimmicky quarterback stuff that I absolutely hate. But that's what still coaches do, and far be it from me to say Lane Kiffin shouldn't do those things because, hell, he forgotten more football than I'll ever know. But point being, that's what he would do. He would do a poor man's version of Percy Harvin.
All right. Yep. And then we go to the defense. And we know what it was. It's not even what it was last year. It's what it's been basically the past five seasons. It's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no sugarcoating that around it. You know, mm-hmm. a couple of JUCO guys coming in to try to shore up the defensive line. You bring back some guys at some key positions. You lose a guy like Jacquez Jones, who may or may not have been a starter. I know there was
shocker. It was a shocker, though. It was a shocker in that building.
Really? Okay, yeah. I didn't know that. Go expound on that then. Why did he leave?
The short answer is nobody really knows for sure.
Okay.
The long answer would be, let's be honest here. Tampering happens with all these schools.
Well, yeah. Well,
I don't want to get into this too deep, you know, because this could go in a really
I'm sure
place.
You don't, Ben Garrett, of old spirit.
I don't want to go into this too deep. Let's just say it could go off in many directions here. But if he ends up in Kentucky, there's a reason he ends up in Kentucky. John Sumrall's in Kentucky, okay?
Right.
And you're right. I mean, there's been bodies added to the room at linebacker to where there was no guarantee that Jacquez was going to be a starter, even though he was the
there shouldn't be anybody guaranteed to start off of the defense. They were terrible.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I mean, the only thing they did well was create turnovers enough that they were able to, like in the Egg Bowl with Tyler Knight caused the fumble at the goal line. It was scooped up by Deion
Murray. Play of the game.
Gray State Yard. Yeah, it was play of the game. So it's what won them the game. So creating enough turnovers saved them from being a complete and utter disaster. In every other respect, in every other measurable respect, they were that bad. They were really bad. So, Jacquez Jones adding bodies to that room, being the leading tackler on the worst defense in the SEC, I mean, what does that mean? But on paper, it's bad because he could help you in some way. And I'm not going to in any way diminish the loss of Jacquez Jones. They did not want to lose him because, I mean, he was a productive linebacker in the SEC. That's just not something that it's easy to lose. So, Jacquez Jones is a loss, but I think one thing that they're excited about is what they've added on the back end in the secondary. They do have numbers in the secondary now. And the freshman class has been really impressive. Tysheem Johnson is a guy that I think is going to contribute immediately. Markevious Brown is a guy that I think is going to contribute immediately. Both of them were already running with the second team in the spring. They just have playmaking ability. But really what it comes down to, you can add all this newness to it. The returning guys that stepped into big roles last year being better, like an A.J. Finley has to be better, right? I mean, I think the two JUCOs you mentioned, they're going to contribute heavily, but where is Sam Williams in this? Where is T. Tisdale in this? Like, those guys were supposed to have taken a step last year. Now, Sam Williams, for all the off-the-field bad stuff, that is really what I think derailed him from having the breakout that he was supposed to have last year, because a lot of people thought he was the best draft-eligible guy they had last year on the roster, and then he didn't play that way. But they don't have a true dominant edge. So, Sam Williams, you have to be that dominant edge guy. Yeah, we can talk about Isaiah Ike and Jamon Gordon. But if those guys are doing their jobs well, and it takes JUCOs a couple of games at least, sometimes half a season, to really become what they end up being. So, like, look, man, you can't rely on those guys. It has to be Sam Williams that has to really, you know, step in and be that edge. Or T. Tisdale, look, you've got to step in and be that three tech, wherever they put you. You have to be that guy that can really command attention that allows the new guys around them. But I'm intrigued by guys like Mark Robinson. He's a transfer that last year didn't play a lot, but really was a starting linebacker this spring. And Otis Reese, the full year of him will be important, I think. I think he'll play kind of a hybrid linebacker safety role. They actually have Jake Springer, the Navy transfer, eligible this year. So all of those guys will be important. And then Tavius Robinson, he's had a full year under his belt, and he was really good. I think he got the defensive MVP of the spring. He was really dominant as a defensive lineman. So that's where the improvement comes from. And then can you continue to be that turnover-creating defense with the improvement around you? Because it's not like they have to go from 130 to 50 to be a really improved defense for an offense that's going to score a lot of points.
Yeah.
Can you go from 130 to 80? That's a significant jump. That's mm-hmm. a big jump.
That's probably two more wins.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So if that's two more wins and you thought that, okay, in a 10-game All-SEC schedule, let's play that out with a non-con, they're probably winning 8 games last year. Well, two more wins is 10. And I'm not saying they're going to win 10 games this year because the schedule's really hard, but I'm saying that if that defense goes from 130 to just 80-something, then they do have a chance to win 8 to 10 games. But, again, that's asking a lot of a defense that wasn't – outside of one particular area very good at all. So
let's look at this game, the one that will be played this year. You know, you look back to last year, we all know that State came to Oxford with a pretty decimated roster with COVID and everything else. I think they played 43, 44 guys in that game. I thought State was going to struggle a lot in that game. And when they went down 14-0,
I didn't.
Well, I mean, you and I are sort of cut from the same cloth. It's just a different color. But when they went down 14-0, I thought, okay, well, I mean, this is going to be really ugly. And then at the end, State's driving to tie the game and just, you know, sort of runs out of time and yardage there. This year, you know, I think everybody would say I expect Mike Leach's offense to be better in year two. State was much better defensively a year ago than we thought they were going to be, and they bring back a lot of guys. And now the game is in Starkville. You know, just obviously it's June, but right now, how do you sort of see this game?
You know, I don't know. When you actually texted me and said, hey, I'm doing the thing that I've been doing for so many years, the 12 weeks, the start from the
back end. And you should be ready for at this point in your life because I always call you.
And I always forget it.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about State. I really don't. I don't. And you know, you could tell me whatever and I would completely buy it because you're there. I'm not. I have no clue. I just always default. When I don't know much about State or I just, you know, am just completely caught up in all the Ole Miss stuff, I just default to what I always say. I don't really care what the teams are outside of the really disastrous teams of Ole Miss since 2016. If both teams are competitive, if both teams are competent, the game is going to be competitive. So I always default to who's at home. Who's at home? And where is it played this year, Brian?
In Starkville.
Okay. So if it's played in Starkville, it's going to be a 10-point game one way or the other. And assuming that Mississippi State is improved, if you're making me predict it in June, I'm going to say Ole Miss is going to lose in Starkville. That's what I'm just going to do because that's just how I always default to it. Now, on paper, Ole Miss is better, but this is just what I've gotten to at this point in my life, right?
Yeah.
To where, all right, if you're making me predict it in June, and okay, then it's a play to start. All right, cool. Well, this is always a 10-point game, so I'm going to pick Mississippi State. But, you know, every piece of evidence that if you're looking at it on paper, you say, okay, Ole Miss is probably the better team this year, and in a normal game, Ole Miss should be favored and would probably win that game. Mm-hmm. But this is never a normal game.
Yeah.
Nothing about these two schools is normal. And it's something that you and I talk about all the time. I mean, nothing's normal about this. And it's miserable at many times. But it is what it is. So, I mean, that's kind of where I am with it. I don't know much of anything about State. Like, for example, I don't know who starts at quarterback. Who's their quarterback?
I think it's going to be Will Rogers, but we'll see.
Okay. I who's their best offensive player?
Jaden Wally.
Okay. Jay, that makes sense. But, like, I looked at the teams last year, and I thought Kylan Hill was probably going to end up being in the conversation for SEC Player of the Year, and then he just doesn't end up finishing the year, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's just so many things that could be at play for this team. Like, I mean, Matt Corral has to stay healthy for Ole Miss. He has to.
Yeah.
And we could talk about the upside of Luke Altmyer or Kincaid could absolutely be fine. Just stepping in and being serviceable. John Rice Plumlee, this whole deal is built around Matt Corral. If anything happens to Matt Corral, all bets are off because he's just that valuable to this program and for this offense, for this team. I mean, he's everything. He's the entire program. And that sounds precarious because no one player should matter that much, but he's the quarterback, for Christ's sake, so it's going to matter that much. But even more than that, I mean, this whole team is built around Lane Kiffin and his offense and his quarterback. And defensively, if you're relying on Ole Miss to make a jump from 130 to 50, then you're fooling yourself. So 130 to 80, if that's the measuring stick, well, an 80 defense with a team led by Kincaid Denner, Luke Altmyer is still not going to be a very good team. You're going to be struggling to be bowl eligible. So it's all about Matt Corral. And as long as Matt Corral is healthy, then I think Ole Miss is better than Mississippi State. But if he's not, going to Starkville is never an easy thing. It never is. So trying to go into Starkville and win the Egg Bowl in that whole environment with a place that just hates everything that is Ole Miss, it's a tough ask. So when I look down the schedule, I mean, that's one of the few questions I have about the schedule.
You should never say the Egg Bowl is, it doesn't matter what.
Yeah.
Never more than a toss-up. It's never
doesn't
more.
Matter. Yeah. And then I look at, like, in November, I mean, my God, Hugh Freeze is coming back to Ole Miss in November. You know? Like, who's decided when they looked at this, this is good for Ole Miss to do? Yeah, this is well, a
that,
smart
that,
thing
that game
do.
Wasn't scheduled when Freeze was at Liberty.
I know.
He was probably at Ole Miss.
Once he went, get rid of it.
Freeze probably told his athletic director, I don't care if they offer you 50. It's Liberty. They got plenty of money.
but it's just so stupid. In the middle of November, as you're going into bowl season, you're playing out this really tough SEC schedule. You got your in-state rival that you got to travel to at the end of the year. Yeah, let's stick the embattled former head coach and attention whore that will just never stop wanting to talk about Ole Miss. Let's stick him right there. With a good team that can beat you. What's the upside for Ole Miss in that game?
Well, there's none now.
Yeah.
6 years ago, whenever it was scheduled, maybe there was some. You know, it was, oh, it's an easy win. Now it's not so much.
There's no upside to it, so just keeping it on the schedule is ridiculous. I'm getting off track here. Point being, if you ask me today, I mean, of course, I'm going to default to what you and I, every time we do one of these things, you and I say the exact same thing every single year.
Well, my scenario is always the same thing. This is how I pick almost every game I pick. Who has the better coach? Who has the better quarterback? Where's the game being played? So who has the better coach? Probably a push, right? Leach and Kiffin, they're both good coaches.
I mean, either both sides are going to say, no, it's lame.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. It's,
but if we're going to be honest, they're both really good college football coaches.
Yeah, I have no clue. I don't pretend to be some expert, so I can't tell you who's the better coach. I don't know.
They both. Who has a better quarterback? Ole Miss has a better quarterback.
Ole Miss.
Correct.
Yeah.
Where's the game being played? It's in
Starkville.
So it's a toss-up, and it's just, you know, who do you think is going to win? So, yeah, it makes sense.
I would pick Ole Miss as the better team right now and say, well, they should win that game, all things equal. Mm. But the Egg Bowl is never all things equal.
Yeah. No,
and it's in Starkville. So, yeah. I mean, knowing this rivalry and having been around it for my 35 years of existence, yeah, probably some dumb as shit will happen and then stay to win.
I look forward to talking to you next June and you picking Ole Miss because the game is awesome.
I mean, after state, you know, it's something. Yeah, I'll pick Ole Miss again because this is what we do.
All right. Ben Garrett, the Ole Miss spirit. We do it every year, man. 12 weeks till kickoff. Get ready for it.
Every single year. Every year. And it's always too early.
Never too early. Thanks, buddy.
All right, buddy.
All right, so something different I want to do this year. And, you know, normally Mississippi State is the last team we preview, and that's the team where we make our prediction for their season. But we're going to make this opponent preview. We're going to do a prediction game by game so that when we get to the last game, we're there. And we already know what our prediction is. So as we sit here today, June the 9th of 2021, you know, some almost 6 months to kick off, how do you see this game going?
As we sit right now, I would say that Ole Miss probably favored.
Oh, they are. Vegas has them installed, I think, as a 7.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I mean, just because of the fact that you know exactly what you're getting with Matt Corral and that offense. They're returning a lot of guys. I know they're losing Elijah Moore, but you just feel like somebody's going to step up and be able to fill his shoes. They didn't have a whole lot of trouble with him out of the game in the bowl game.
Right.
So, you know, they're going to have talent. Yeah, they're going to have talent. So, and Matt, you have probably the most talented quarterback in the SEC from just a pure arm strength and, you know, what he's able to do with the football in his hands. So I would say that they'd probably be favored as of today, and I would probably favor them.
Okay.
But it's just one of those games. It seems like every year when you get to it, you still have these question marks going into the ball game, and you could never really kind of nail down. I thought a couple of years ago State was – you know, a heavy favorite in that ball game. In my opinion, I thought they would win that ball game even more than they did. And that game was close and startable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so hard to predict. But yeah. I would pick Ole Miss at this point.
I would take State right now just because.
Because it's a home game?
It's because it's a home game because I am counting on Leach to be better offensively, and I am not counting on Ole Miss to be much better defensively. And I think that Arnett, with a fully healthy defense, and you know it's the end of the year, and you may not be fully healthy, but you're going to have a lot more depth this year than you had last year.
Yeah.
And so I
talent in the back end that you can cover some of those guys that you didn't cover last year.
Forbes and Emerson and Jalen Green, I feel better about your ability to do that. And there is no Elijah Moore now, and he was a real difference maker in that game. So right now, close game, but I agree with Ben, who also picked State to win at this juncture. So
okay. Well, so. I feel like the Ole Miss homer here. Sorry.
Old Spirit Robbie over there.
That's right.
So later on, Robbie and Chuck Rounsville will give you their thoughts on Ole Miss's top five recruiting weekends.
From Funkies. Live from Funkies.
Live.
All right. Let's move on over to the other half of this show and our SEC preview. That's also, of course, brought to you by our good friends over at Welcome Home Beef. Don't forget the sales that are going on this week. $2.89 a pound ground chuck, $3.99 a pound ground brisket. A burger made out of ground brisket just sounds like it would be fantastic. And sirloin steaks, a great cut, only $4.99 a pound. But don't forget, there's plenty of other cuts there available for you at Welcome Home Beef. They are your full-service butcher shop. Any special order you need to make, they've got you taken care of. And any information, any knowledge you need on how to cook the meat, they've got that as well. Call them today at 662-268-8148. Visit them online at ABSMS. Well, at WelcomeHomeBeef.com. Welcome Home Beef.
It just tastes good.
Two Brothers Smoked Meats. I was at Two Brothers for lunch just yesterday. Pulled pork grilled cheese sandwich.
Ooh.
So good. Mac and cheese, a little pork belly in there.
Ooh.
I mean, how can you go wrong with that? Fantastic place. Great service. Everybody's out in there happy. I ran into a friend of mine who's a huge Ole Miss fan who from Vicksburg. And she was like, oh, my God, I haven't seen you in so long. And I was like, what are you doing in Starkville? And she was dropping her daughter off at a cheerleading camp. And I was just like, gosh, we're old.
Wow.
We're so old. But it was good to see her. And hey, she knew where to go. When she was in Starkville, she was with some friends who were State fans, and they knew the place, and that was Two Brothers. That needs to be the place for you this weekend. Make sure you head up here and grab hold of something from their tremendous menu. Two Brothers Smoked Meats, Southern Smoked Soul Food in the heart of the Cotton District. Advantage Business Systems wants to take care of you on two fronts. They've got a catalog, an inventory of products, services, technology upgrades, the stuff that your business needs to run with more profits and less problems, and they back that up with the kind of customer service you would expect from your next-door neighbor. And that's what Advantage Business Systems is. They are a local business. They are a Mississippi business. They've been helping Mississippians for nearly 50 years. If you haven't called them already, you need to call them today and find out how they can help you. Call them at 601-362-9192 or visit them online at absms.com. Got it right that time. Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. SEC preview time. The Kentucky Wildcats. I bring this up in my interview, and I talked to John Hale of the Courier Journal. We'll talk to him in just a minute. But has Kentucky for you reached that point where, like 3 years ago, you say, hey, Kentucky's going to go 3-9. I'm like, okay, I believe it. Now I would be surprised if they were bad. Like, yeah. I expect Kentucky going to bowl games.
They've now hit the point of their kind of like middle of the pack. Like in the
and sort of where Mullen had State.
Yeah, but they're I don't know if they're on that.
Can they get to that same? Can they get to number one in the nation?
No. I think State might have been like a slight rung ahead of them.
The difference is this. Tell me if I'm wrong. The quarterback. State got Dak Prescott. They had an elite quarterback in place that allowed them to elevate to number one. If Kentucky could find their Dak Prescott.
Well, Kentucky is doing. Kentucky's kind of doing what State was doing under Mullen. They're getting some good offensive linemen that they're developing.
Very good.
The defensive line's good. The linebackers, they've always got one or two really good linebackers that end up going high in the draft. They always got a couple of good safeties. They're building their team kind of around the offensive line, defensive line, and the defense. But they just have. In 2018, when they were competing for the SEC East. I felt like they had really turned a corner. Like I felt like they were really about to be, you know, dangerous. They had finally got over the hump and beat Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, they finally got over the hump and beat Mississippi State.
Yeah.
So you kind of felt like this team's really turned the corner. Now they've regressed back.
Yeah.
They won 8 games and 5 games.
I think that's sort of what – they're in the same sort of cycle that Mississippi State is, in that in a 5-year cycle, they'll have some 8-win seasons. They'll have maybe a 6-win season. And then they have that 1 year where they elevate. And that was in 2018, both Mississippi State and Kentucky should have elevated. Only Kentucky did.
Yeah.
And I think last year was sort of their step back here. And I think that a lot of that was happening because, at the end of the day, Terry Wilson was just not a good quarterback. Good athlete. Yeah. But
I think
not,
they were hoping
can't
that,
pass.
I think they were hoping that Joey Gatewood would come in and he was going to be the guy.
And
he never got cleared until later on, and then it was too late. But, yeah, I mean, they are a lot like Mississippi State. They had that one good year where they won 5 SEC games, and then, you know, everything else has just kind of been like 3-4 SEC wins a year.
They win their non-conference.
They're going to go to a bowl game every year.
Louisville being down is helping them right now. That's another win for them.
But they've finished inside the top 25, I think, only one time, and that was that year.
Yeah, they're not quite where Mullen had State, but they're on that they're in that slight tier below.
But, I mean, that place – is so difficult to win because basketball rules there. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like at Mississippi State where baseball is so big. It's just, and you know, and maybe not on the, it's not nearly on the same level as basketball because that's an actual revenue sport, but people just don't care about football there like they do basketball.
And despite having a larger population, there are more quality football players in Mississippi than there are in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And State and Ole Miss.
They're having a pool, and Mark, give Mark Stoops credit, he's going to Ohio, he's going to this Midwestern states, and he's going and getting talented players from up there. He knows where to pull.
You talked about this on the message board about how, you know, State can live in that zone where you're, if you're getting guys at LSU and Alabama and Auburn don't quite have room for, you're doing really good. He's doing that from a Big Ten perspective. Mm-hmm. He's getting the guys at Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan don't quite have room for. Those guys can win in the SEC. You can win with that team.
And he's been so close. They almost got who was the kid a few years ago that was running back that ended up going, I think, to Bama. It was
I know you're talking about, my mind's completely gone blank.
Harris? Was it Damian Harris?
Damian Harris.
So he was going to go to Kentucky. Yeah. They've been right there. They almost
Mac Jones was committed to Kentucky. So, and then what, when they flipped
to
Alabama?
That is the difference, probably. In
they need
them,
one guy.
That was the difference in them going from, you know, from that 10-win season in 18 to 12 wins to back down to 8-5.
Let's get this interview in. I talked to John Hale from the Louisville Courier Journal. He has been covering the Wildcats for a long time. Frequent guest here on Thunder and Lightning. Let's get his thoughts on the Kentucky Wildcats. Kentucky is who's on base today for the SEC preview. Joining me now on the Welcome Home Beef Hotline, John Hale covers the Wildcats for the Louisville Courier Journal. Great reporter, not a fan of the Champions of Europe, much to his dismay, I'm sure. John, Kentucky has sort of turned a corner for me in terms of expectation. And what I mean by that is 2 years ago, if you say, okay, Kentucky's going to go 3-9, I'm not completely surprised by that. Now I would be really surprised if Kentucky is not a bowl team and possibly a lot better than that. Is it the same way in Kentucky? Have fans reached a level of expectation of winning?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's obviously not an Alabama. It's not an LSU, an Auburn, a Georgia, anything like that. But they've certainly reached the point in the program where Rich Brooks had it, what, 10 or 15 years ago, where they were expecting to go to a bowl game every season, win or six or seven games, you get to a mid to low level bowl game and go from there. The question becomes, can you take it to another level? And Mark Stoops so far has shown the signs that might be possible, to where you can have this baseline of having a winning record every season, and then maybe every 3 or 4 years you have a bunch of veterans, you have some things go your way, and you could make a run at the East. They did that a few years ago with Josh Allen and Benny Snell and all those guys, won 10 games for the first time in 40 years in the program, had a winner-take-all game for the East against Georgia that they lost. But now, can you do that consistently? And I think what happens this year is going to say a lot about that, because they've got holes to fill, but they have a lot of talent coming back. They've gotten to a point where you feel good about kind of plugging and playing and filling those holes with guys who are even higher-ranked recruits than the players they're replacing. But you have to go out and prove it and prove that you're more than you know, a mid-level bowl team every season. But that's absolutely the kind of bare minimum expectation now.
Kentucky, Mississippi State had something in common. They were both one-dimensional offensively last year. It was a different dimension. State, obviously, through the air. Kentucky, a lot better on the ground. What does the Kentucky do this year to be more dynamic in the passing game?
Yeah, the hope was, I mean, I think Mark Stoops acknowledged, for as much as that's kind of his identity, you know, smash mouth, he wants to win, be a physical team, he wants that to be the compliment everybody pays his team. He acknowledged that they can't take that next step that we were just talking about if they're only one-dimensional, if they can't ever throw the ball. And so he made a change, which I don't think he really wanted to do, but he decided it was best for the program, or he fired Eddie Grant, the offensive coordinator, and Darren Hinshaw, the quarterback's coach. Brian Liam Cohen, who was the assistant quarterbacks coach for the Los Angeles Rams, to try and implement the offense that Sean McVay has run in the NFL, but is, you know, a bunch of teams are trying to copy there. Bring it to college football. See if you can have an offense that's built heavily on play-action pass, that gets the tight ends involved, that becomes a competent passing game, but also doesn't abandon the run. Maybe still is built on the run first. We're going to see how that works this year, but the new scheme is the hope. They did bring in some wide receiver talent in the transfer portal, namely Wandell Robinson from Nebraska, who's a local kid who was originally committed to Kentucky in high school, then flipped to Nebraska, was pretty successful there, doing a little bit of everything. So you have somebody to throw the ball to now. Now they have to have a quarterback, which is the big question going into the summer. And until we get the answer there, and one of the three guys competing for the job proves he's capable of elevating that passing game, it's going to continue to be a question mark and a doubt about this team, regardless of what the scheme is.
Is Joey Gatewood going to be the quarterback, or is that going to go a different way?
Yeah, my pick is actually Will Levis, the transfer from Penn State. He just got to campus, a week ago now. So he was not here for spring practice as he finished his degree at Penn State. He was their backup the last 2 years, but he played a bunch for them. He's a dual-threat guy, has a great arm, can run quite a bit. Liam Cohen, the new offensive coordinator, he brought in Levis particularly himself. They had some history in terms of when Cohen was actually the offensive coordinator at Maine, 1AA, FCS, whatever it's called now, 4 or 5 years ago, and he was aware of Levis, who's from Connecticut at the time. Obviously, Levis ended up being a much better player than Maine could have ever landed, but they knew each other, and Cohen came in, saw the quarterback options he inherited at Kentucky, decided they need some more competition, and went out and handpicked Levis. So to me, that's kind of the leader in the clubhouse. I do think Joey Gatewood made some strides in spring, was better than what we saw in some limited action last fall. So he's legitimate competition, and certainly having the spring practice to learn the new offense before Levis got here is going to be a leg up for him. But if I'm handicapping it, I have Levis 1A, Gatewood 1B, and then Bo Allen, who's a former four-star recruit from Lexington, played a little bit last year as a true freshman, is a third factor in that battle.
On the offensive line, Kentucky had one of the best offensive lines in the SEC a season ago, and it looks like, I mean, they're poised to do that again. Three seniors in the potential starting five and a redshirt junior.
Yep.
It was a great story last year, obviously, with the Kentucky offensive line. How good can they be this year, and can they build upon what they did last year?
Yeah, they can be really good, but I do think that's another area to watch. I mean, the hope for Kentucky fans and Mark Stoops and everybody else in the program is that you take what you've done so well on offense in terms of the offensive line play, running the ball the last 4 or 5 years, and then add in this new passing game with the new offensive scheme they're bringing in. But there's no guarantee that you don't lose something, too, from what they ran before, and there is going to be some change in what the offensive line does. I mean, the former scheme was built heavily on the inside zone run. Well, Liam Cohen's offense is built heavily on the outside zone run, so that's something they had to learn a little bit this spring and adapt to. The good news is they've got veterans. Getting Luke Fortner back for that extra year of eligibility was huge for them in terms of a steadying presence in the interior spots. Getting Darian Kennard to come back to school, even though he might have been a second-day NFL draft pick, is a big deal. It's funny, we actually had our first in-person interviews with anybody in the football program for more than a year earlier this week, and Kennard came and talked to us, and just seeing him in person versus seeing him on through a computer screen, that dude looks like an NFL offensive tackle, and I think the Athletic has him projected as a first-round pick right now. So that's a pretty good place to start if you want to build an offensive line. But they did lose some important guys. They lost their center in Drake Jackson, who'd started for 4 years. That's a big hole to fill that they still don't really have an answer for heading into summer. And then obviously they lost, the heart and soul of that line with John Schlarman, the position coach who died after a 2-year battle with cancer last fall. So it's still a group that's got some turnover, but they've got lots of talent and lots of experience. So you hope that's something to build around with the new offense.
Kind of the same story defensively. Again, looking at this projected depth chart, possibly 8 senior starters on a defense. And, Kentucky under Stoops has been known for hard-nosed defense. They've been putting guys in the NFL. How good will this defense be? And is there a guy, sort of a Josh Allen kind of player, that you could see, hey, that guy's a for sure future pro?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that if we're talking about how the program has changed and the perception of the program, the defense is where you start, because they lose a bunch. I mean, they lost a first-round draft pick in Jamin Davis at linebacker. They lost a second-round draft pick in Kelvin Joseph at corner, another draft pick in Brandon Echols at corner. And so normally with Kentucky football, for most of its history, you'd say, oh, you lose 3 draft picks for your defense. They're going to take a major step back. But the guys that they have filling those holes are arguably were better recruits than the guys they're replacing. So we'll see how that goes. And obviously they need experience and may learn on the job. But there are other veterans who are really important to this group and are coming back. And it looks like they've gotten to the point where they're kind of plug and play. They can fill in some other guys there and be pretty good. In terms of individual standouts, I don't think they have a Josh Allen talent, probably not even a Jamin Davis talent in terms of first-round draft picks. But, you know, nobody was saying that about Jamin Davis this time a year ago either. But you look at a guy like Josh Pascal, who's on the defensive line. He's shown the potential at times to be a real game changer. And he's 2 years removed now from treatments for a malignant melanoma, so he's back to 100% physically. He looked great in the first half last season and then got kind of banged up in, you know, the rigors of an all-SEC schedule and was limited a little bit in the second half. He's going to be, I think, an all-SEC contender for them. DeAndre Square at inside linebacker is really important. Yusuf Corker at safety. I don't know if any of those guys are high-level draft picks, but they're all, I think, could be all-SEC kind of contenders and then see where it goes from there.
When I look at Kentucky's schedule, I mean, it seems pretty favorable. Your two West teams there are LSU and Mississippi State. Those are winnable games, in my opinion. You get Tennessee and Florida at home. When I say you, I'm not saying you. I'm saying
Kentucky. Right.
I don't want to lump you in with the
They're not winning many games if they're counting on me to play.
Yeah. But I like the schedule for Kentucky. You know, what's if assuming you know the offense is what you, what it can be if it does become a little bit better in the passing game, but it keeps some of that potency in the run game. How good can this Kentucky team be? What's the ceiling?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ceiling can be this if those things work out that we're talking about. If they find a quarterback, if they fill those holes on defense with talented players, the passing game's competent. One of those years where they take that next step from, you know, maybe not contending for the East because I don't think they're Georgia or Florida by any means, but being that clear third team in the division, working into a next level kind of role, a January 1st and Outback, a Citrus Bowl kind of thing. Because you're right, the schedule sets up great, not only with the games they have, but the timing. Because that first month, it's Louisiana, Monroe, Missouri, Chattanooga, South Carolina, four winnable games. Then you've got the stretch, Florida, LSU, Georgia in a row. That's going to be difficult, no doubt about it. But if you could steal one of those somehow, you'd be in great shape because then you close with Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, New Mexico State, Louisville, all five winnable games. You could start fast. You could end on a really high note. And that could get you to eight or nine wins without really upsetting anybody. So I think that if there are questions, no doubt, but this is definitely a team that has the potential to maybe, you know, have a success level that we haven't seen in Kentucky very often.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good Kentucky team. And like I said at the beginning, that's what I expect from the Wildcats this year and pretty much every year now under Mark Stoops. He's done a great job with that program. John Hale from the Courier-Journal, man, thanks so much for your time. I always appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Robbie, I say it every year. The Kentucky game in the against Mississippi State is the swing game of the season. Mullen was able to consistently go to bowls by winning that game every year. He only lost it, what, one time?
One time.
One time, and
they
that was
lost
on the Peter Sermon year.
Yes.
Which you could forgive that almost.
And they lost by a field goal.
Yeah.
And a field goal that you were like, how did that guy make
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Now I feel like, you know, Kentucky's won two of the last three, and this game this year obviously is in Starkville, but I feel like Kentucky could make it three out of four. When we're about to go over their schedule, when you listen to the schedule, Robbie, it's very favorable for Kentucky. They have a path to nine wins. We'll just have to see if they get there. And as John mentioned, they can start off very fast. This is their first four games. Louisiana, Monroe, Missouri, Chattanooga, and then they're at South Carolina. They could very easily be 4-0 on September the 25th.
Did Dan Mullen make the schedule?
Well, you know, just want
to
play these games.
It's hard to win.
You want to play these games in you want to play those teams in December and January, not in September and October.
UT Chattanooga. They want to
nick
the show.
Chattanooga. They want to nick the show. Yeah. I'm going to have them 4-0.
University of Missouri. That's
That's at Kentucky.
We got a Bowden at Fun Row, right?
That's right, Terry. And Rich Rodder there. Yeah.
Look out.
I still am going to take Kentucky.
UM Monroe beat, didn't they beat Arkansas or something a few years ago?
I think that's right.
They played like two or three SEC games of that year.
Yeah.
But,
of course, they beat Saban his first year at Alabama.
That's right, they did.
Fun Row was developed.
I'm going 3-0 at least. I'm probably going to go 4-0. I don't think South Carolina's going to be
ready. South Carolina's going to be any good, no.
Uh-uh.
So 4-0, and then they get Kentucky, or so they get Florida at home.
And that is a team that they've turned it a little bit here.
They beat them in 18. And then,
which was hilarious because Dan Mullen always owned Kentucky at Mississippi State. He goes to Florida and loses to him
at home.
For the first
time in 30 years.
And I'm like,
and I remember that game because that was the weekend State played Kansas State. So State had just dominated Kansas State. You see Mullen losing this game and you're just like, I can't wait to play Florida. And, of course, how did that turn out?
Then you play Kentucky and that happened. Yeah. And then you played Florida the next week.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I think as we sit here today,
I'm going to take Florida to win, but not going to be surprised if Kentucky finds a way in that game.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what Florida looks like this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to look more like a Nick Fitzgerald team because I don't think Emory Jones is the passer.
Yeah, they've lost some big pieces. Now he's recruited well,
mm-hmm.
And he always seems to figure it out at the quarterback spot. So I'm going to go with Florida too. So we're going to say 4-1 at that point, and then hosted LSU, which is still has some question marks.
That's a winnable football game.
I'm going to go with LSU.
I will too.
There,
but that's just today.
Yeah,
that's a toss up to me. Again, that's two toss up games. I think Florida may not be a toss up. Maybe like 75-25. LSU is more like 60-40. I don't know what I'm getting at LSU yet.
Okay, as we record this, I did not get a chance to hear the interview.
Right.
So who did he say is the starting quarterback?
He thinks it's going to be the grad transfer from Penn State, Levis.
Okay.
He thinks that the offensive coordinator they hired has a connection with him, so he's sort of a hand-picked kind of guy.
Gotcha. So
they don't think it's going to be Gatewood. He doesn't think it's going to be Gatewood.
Okay. I guess Gatewood was just a complete bust of a transfer.
The guy they hired, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, came from the LA Rams. So more of that offense that Sean McVay runs, and they want to pass a lot more.
Gotcha.
This year.
They better start making some major changes on that roster to pass if they want to.
Yeah, that offensive line is built to run.
Yeah,
and we saw how that can go.
I mean, the last 3 years maybe they've been run heavy.
Run. I mean,
Lynn Bowden came out there and they just ran the Wildcat the whole game, and then the year before that they had Benny Snell.
Yeah, and then last year, I mean, they didn't have like a one guy, but between Rodriguez and Cavassier Smoke and
Rose.
Yeah, I mean, they could run the football. Georgia's a loss.
Yes.
At Georgia.
At Athens.
So we've gotten
I think Georgia's a chance to be really good. We'll talk about them another day, but
Georgia is my preseason national champion.
I mean, based on what I saw when JT Daniels came in the ballgame, which I was blowing that guy up before the season even started, and people were arguing me about how he was.
Oh, I know.
But anyway, we'll talk about them another day.
So we've got them 4-3. Could easily be 5-2, but 4-3 is where they are, and then they play Mississippi State.
They haven't been very good in Starkville.
Have not.
So I'm going to go
with win in Starkville 2000, and
they didn't beat Mullen there.
I think it's 2006.
It was Kroom,
because there was a year where they played back to back years where Kentucky,
when they had Woodson at quarterback. Was his name Woodson?
Well, they won in Lexington in 2007.
Yes, won in Lexington,
so they would have beaten State in 2008.
Yeah,
and then since somewhere
State won one of those games against Kentucky at home, didn't they? It was either 06 or 08.
It was
they didn't lose both of those.
Yeah,
they did.
Well, because they won in 04. There's a time in here when this is when the SEC, for whatever reason, remember when State played at Alabama back to back years, and they played Kentucky at home back to back years, and that's when it went away from evens to odds. So I have to go back and look. But I'm pretty sure. I can go back and look. I know Kentucky won in Starkville in 2008. So that's the last time they won here.
Okay.
Mullen beat them 10-12, 14-16. Well, see, no, sorry, 14 it was up in Kentucky.
Okay, so I have the list here. So the last time Kentucky won in Starkville was 08.
Okay.
And they won in 06.
Okay. Yeah, Kroom's first year in 04, State beat them.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
Yes, 22-7.
So, as we sit here today, I mean, last year, State didn't play well for weeks, this was really the low point game for Mississippi State a season ago. 24-2. Costello played maybe, that might have been his worst game. A game that defensively you did more than enough to win.
Well, what was so frustrating about that game, we watched it from my house, cooked some chicken, some country poison sauce.
Delicious.
What was frustrating about that ball game is there were so many opportunities. Every time State came on the field, okay, here we go.
Yeah, they'll get
because they kept getting stops on defense.
Yeah.
They throw the interception in the end zone right before halftime that just went off of Jaden Wally's hands.
Yeah.
Osiris Mitchell had a touchdown catch ripped out of his hands.
Yeah,
that's 14 points right there.
Don't forget they had was it a safety that had they got taken off the board?
Yes, it was Emmanuel Forbes
tackled a guy.
He hit the guy in the end zone. They said he was, I guess, It was either incomplete or they said forward progress.
They called it, I think they called it incomplete. Yeah, something like that. So they had opportunities.
There was plenty of opportunities there. That's 16 points right there that was off the board.
So let's play the same game we played with Ole Miss. If State's better offensively, and we know that State can handle Kentucky off defensively, it feels like you should pick State to win.
I was going to say State wins this game anyway.
Okay.
I don't even think it's a toss-up for me, just based on history.
It's definitely a toss-up for me, but I will take Mississippi State today.
The only reason I say that is, you know, I just feel like State has enough pieces returning, and there's not enough that I know about Kentucky offensively and what they're bringing in, especially with the quarterback that they're bringing in, that I feel like they're going to win this ball game.
Yeah, okay.
So, Or that they can. I think Mississippi State wins this game.
What a roller coaster here. They went from 4-0 to 4-4.
Again, Dan Mullen made this thing.
They have a chance to finish 8-4. Because let's look at the final month of the season. So September was great. Blue October, and now here we are. Tennessee goes to Kentucky. Then they're at Vanderbilt. Then New Mexico State comes to Kentucky. And then they go to Louisville.
God, they could go 4-0. This schedule is weird.
It's really odd.
Tennessee, I don't know what they're going to look like this year. I mean, anytime you have a new coach, it's just you're filling them out.
I just feel like their team, the portal is hit really hard. They don't know who their quarterback's going to be.
This is the time to get them.
Yeah, get them all the way down. I think Kentucky wins that game.
They're going to beat Vanderbilt.
They'll beat New Mexico State. And then Louisville was really bad a season ago.
Yeah.
And Satterfield was like looking for jobs the last week of the season. Don't think he's happy up there.
I don't know. It could go either way.
It is a rivalry game.
But
I think they're going 8-4.
That's at Louisville. I think Louisville might win that ball game.
So I say 8-4, and you're saying 7-5.
Yeah.
All right. But still, that's a quality season.
That's a good season.
So, and again, they have some games in here, but with Florida to a lesser degree, but they're two West teams, LSU and Mississippi State. Those are games that Kentucky could find a way to win.
I feel like State and Kentucky are two comparable programs in many ways. So I think that their fan base should be thrilled with 7 or 8 wins and like we said earlier, elevating in a year and just making sure that you're constantly going to a bowl game and you're getting to that bowl game, you have a chance to win one more game.
Yeah.
7 or 8 wins, if either one of us is right, I think that's a good season for Kentucky, especially this year where it seems kind of like it's a little bit of a transition, a little bit, because you got that new quarterback coming in. Mm-hmm. So anything more than what we predict is great for Stoops.
I agree. Good football talk here in the middle of baseball season. Tomorrow will be all baseball. We'll preview the Super Regional. We'll talk with Patrick Engel of Blue and Gold Illustrated about the Irish, and we'll have all that for you on our Friday podcast. I will not be on Sports Talk Mississippi today, so if you're one of those people who's like, gosh, do I hate Ole Miss people,
Don't turn on the radio today.
No, turn it on. They'll be talking a lot of college baseball, a lot of great stuff there. I'll be back on Friday. Richard won't be on Friday, so it'll just be me and Borky, which means the show will actually be fun.
So turn it on Friday.
Yes, don't miss it on Friday. So, guys, have a great Thursday. We'll be back with you on Friday. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi.
A Super Talk Mississippi media production.